Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Aaron Newcomb joins me. We're going to look at the foreman. It gets your machine running all the way from boot up to being useful. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Aaron Newcomb. Episode 234, recorded November 28th, 2012. The Foreman. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneEnge.com, bringing you each week, or as often as I can, the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the little projects, the projects you've probably been listening to all the time, like Linux and stuff, but maybe some projects that you haven't heard anything about, like maybe this week. It might be something that you might not have heard about. But before I get started, let's go ahead and bring on my co-host, Aaron Newcomb. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks, Randall. Glad to be here.
And if you're looking, I don't know if you can see on the monitor, this is, I'm actually in new digs, man. I'm working for my new client, and they have a room that has a big window in it, but I thought it'd be bad for reviewing. But I'm just sitting here. I'm on the 13th floor of the Howard Hughes building. So
Lots of history there.
Sorry?
Lots of history.
Yes. Ooh. This is one of the buildings that's made a lot of stuff going on happen here, but they're not doing that right now. We're not in the aviation business, so it's all good there. But I'm really glad they gave me the shelf space, gave me the office space, so I could do that. So we have an interesting guest today. He's Ohad Levy. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Maybe Ohad Levy, one of those. Anyway, I'll have to ask when he comes on. I'm also he's going to talk to us about the Foreman. I don't think that's his boss. It's some sort of software that allows you to take a system from just booting, only knowing its MAC address or whatever, and all the way up through getting it the right IP address, and then getting it the right image to start with, and then getting that all configured up, and then eventually like firing up Puppet or whatever it takes to keep the thing up and running. So, I think what's interesting about this is that it works not only for bare metal, but also for cloud stuff. So it really just sort of unifies all that. So I'm really interested in getting this guy on the show. Yeah, right. From talking to him today. So, Aaron, have you looked into this much?
I haven't. I don't know much about it. I'm intrigued by the name, though, the Foreman. I mean, it sounds suitable for the project, but I'm really interested in finding out more about it. Back in the day, we used to do we used to have startup scripts. The environment I worked with, we would load a tape and attach the tape drive to the server. These were HP servers, Unix servers, and the tape drive would spin, load the operating system and some basic settings, and then after that got up and running, you'd have to connect to the server and customize a configuration script that you would run to basically set all these types of configuration variables and whatnot to get the server up and running. So I think that configuration tools are always very useful for system admins, and it'll be interesting to see what the Foreman is all about and see how much of that headache that the Foreman can alleviate for us.
Yeah, cool. And I've been informed that he's got a little bit of a gravelly voice. He seems to have a cold going on. He almost canceled, but I said, no, we'll just go with it. And please bear with me if it's a little bit gravelly, but I'm sure he'll have something very interesting to say. So without further ado, let's go ahead and bring him on. Ohad Levy, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Happy to be here.
Great. Where are you speaking to us from?
I'm located in Israel.
Oh, wow. So we've got one of these long-distance conversations going on again. Really nice. That's very cool. I gave sort of a overview of what I could see about the Foreman at the beginning of the show. Frankly, I didn't have a lot of time to do some research for this, so hopefully you can fill us in. Why don't you give us sort of the 30,000-foot view of what the Foreman is about and what problem it solves?
All right, great. So the idea is that we can try help people. The operation management is usually not the secret sauce of the company you're working for. So we try to simplify the processes and automate them in the same way. So really what we want to do is to provide a kind of a self-service, user interface where you can build your infrastructure regardless if it's running on a cloud or on premises, on virtualization or bare metal, but basically provide one simple process to manage the life cycle of your servers. After that, we basically so we basically take care for everything around provisioning, you know, all of the obvious things like DNS and whatever is required to build up your servers. Obviously, afterwards, we hook into configuration management, and later on, we integrate very deeply with Puppet, so we can provide information and basically tell Puppet what to do. And later on, we can analyze what Puppet did, whether it's supposed to be doing, whether your systems are, you know, aligned, or they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, you know, in compliance and so on. And both expose everything for an API, so it's very easy to consume it and build larger tools around it, and at the same time make it very easy, web-friendly, so operators who don't necessarily need to understand all the complexity of your infrastructure can simply build stuff. And it doesn't have to be operators, could be your developers, could be your power users, or, you know, someone who knows how to select a couple of drop-downs.
Wow, great answer. Thank you. Okay, I think we're done. No. Great. Let's see. So let me get a more traditional view of this, and then we can see how the foreman actually helps us out with it. So if I'm putting a machine in a rack, not the country, but a rack, a rack, putting a machine in the rack, all I really have to distinguish it from its neighbors is, I guess, the Ethernet MAC address, I would presume. Or maybe is there some sort of lower-level hardware ID or something? But it's really the MAC address that identifies the machine. And in a traditional setup, tell me if I'm wrong here, but a traditional setup, I then have to go to a bunch of different places, the DHCP server, the IP address allocations, start like layering all these things up. And then ultimately also have to build a Puppet profile for it and hope that it finds its way to Puppet somehow. So is that sort of the traditional way? Is the foreman fixing that?
So that's the bare metal way, or at least VMs or bare metal that are treated as bare metal. So obviously foreman automates that. So we do, as you mentioned, we get the MAC, we can create DHCP reservations, we can auto-assign IP address. We manage the IP address, or at least suggest an unused IP addresses. We have a concept of multiple subnets and multiple locations, so it's very easy to have a centralized service managing a large scale multi data center, multi countries, and so on. So we basically, regardless of the process, for bare metal as you described is one way. Maybe building it in EC2 is a completely different way. But what we do is basically make the look and feel as identical as possible. So if you know how to provision a bare metal using foreman, you basically know how to provision an instance in EC2 as well.
Ah, I see. So that's part of what we're isolating here, is that the bare metal provisioning, you really had to kind of know a lot about all the pieces and stuff. And you had to set up things, I think they're called like Pixie Boots or whatever, to provide some sort of booting image so that it can come up on your system. Whereas the way you start something in EC2 is completely different. So this is hiding all that then.
Right. So it's trying to hide. Obviously, someone might need to know the details when they're initially setting things up. What we did was basically went to every infrastructure service like DHCP and DNS and whatever that didn't have a proper API, we basically wrote a web-based RESTful API so we can consume it. Foreman actually internally will consume an API create a DHCP record and generate TFTP settings or whatever they are needed for bare metal. So really what we try to do is really hide the details and make the process as similar as possible.
And so what are the arenas that you're currently working with now? You just said EC2 and you said bare metal and VM provisioning. There other main arenas?
Yeah, sure. So what we do specifically, within cloud providers is we have EC2, we have Rackspace. Just merging up now, we have OpenStack support for both bare metal and obviously the OpenStack instances themselves. We have VMware Ovirt, RevM, Libvirt directly. So really, as many as possible cloud implementations or hypervisor implementations possible within foreman.
So how did this project get started, and how long has it been in play?
So started about, I guess, three years and a bit, based on experience of my previous work, where I was hard. You know, I had was working for a company, a large scale company, where I was trying to harmonize its infrastructure. And the main things that, you know, was coming from the point where configuration was different across many places and the operation processes were completely different. And we tried to find the right tools to automate as much as possible, but we also realized that without end-to-end automation, things will be different. And we didn't want that. So that was maybe before cloud agility was that common, but basically it started as a, you know, things that I learned and my peers, we learned together when we implemented a new solution. And later on, you know, I was always interested in using open source as much as I can. And I really wanted to share our knowledge. You know, I'm a believer that infrastructure is usually not your secret sauce within the company you work for. And I really wanted to share. And it started as a, you know, email. Here I have a project at GitHub. What do you guys think about it? And, you know, a few days later, I'm starting to get patches. And now we have a very large community with a lot of enterprises and a lot of, you know, large scales education institutes, or really, I mean, I would say pretty much a lot of companies that are using Forma. We have a very large ecosystem and community. So I'm really thrilled that it's only 3 years, but it's been one hell of a ride.
Great. So you keep saying we. I presume are you talking about Red Hat?
Okay, so I initially worked on Forman alongside with a colleague of mine from my previous company. Later on, at some point in time, I've started working for Red Hat. So by saying we, I usually mean the community, because even though I started the project, it doesn't mean that I could made it what it is today. So, you know, like any other project, when you start, you have one vision, and when you start going ahead, people, you know, an amazing community start asking questions. All of a sudden you realize, oh, you know, we can do that a whole lot better, or there is a better ways. So basically it's a collection of best practices from various, you know, operations and DevOps kind of attitude community. So it's just keeping better, getting better and better.
Now, are you like the grand poobah in the sense that ultimately you get to decide what's coming up in the next release or not?
I never had to say that out loud, but yeah.
It's still your baby. Okay, you're the benevolent dictator. I like to call him the Grand Poobah just because it evokes real old memories for me. So given that you're paid for by Red Hat, though, I mean, Red Hat pays your salary, does that put any sort of – is the company sort of have goals that sort of push you in certain directions to make this work?
Red Hat has been a really an amazing company. So initially when I started joining – so when I joined, I wasn't planning on working on Forman full-time. But as time moved forward, we realized it could be a good solution for many of or a few of our future offering. So what we do now is basically we integrate with Forman on a higher level management tools. Usually when a request comes in from Red Hat or whoever, we try to analyze it and see if it makes sense. If it makes sense, we add it. And so far, everything that Red Hat asked for makes a lot of sense. So we never had a real conflict. And if there are really tiny details, then you know, if it makes sense, I'm happy to include it. If it doesn't make sense, then usually we can convince each other that it doesn't make sense, or it does make sense.
But you said you already have a fairly large community. How do you manage the commit flow and sort of the governance, I guess, if you like? Like, how do you manage, like, talking about what's going into the next release?
Usually, commit flow, a few months ago, we moved to GitHub pull request flow, and that was pretty good. We have an integrated Jenkins. We test all pull requests before they get merged. So that filters a lot of noise at the same time, or at least gives, you know, an immediate feedback that something is wrong. At the same time, a few of us have commit access to the repository, but it's not that we have 100 commits per day. We try to have a really topic-based commits. So today's a bad day to look at the Git log. But normally, when you look at the Git log, it's usually a very specific topic where, I added this feature and it includes all of this stuff and it was tested and so on, and or this bug request. So usually the amount of flow is not, we don't have hundreds of commits per day. If it's something trivial, usually, it gets reviewed and someone else can merge it. If it's more than that, I'm usually the one to eventually merge it in.
So if I was going to set this up, what would I need to get started? What kind of things? Do I need a dedicated server, a database of some sort? Obviously I need Puppet, right? I mean, that's kind of probably the first requirement, right?
Okay, so people can start from various directions. People who have already Puppet infrastructure can integrate very easily with Foreman without requiring all of the headache. That means you can set up Foreman without provisioning just to get information about your system, inventory, reporting, and so on. If you want to have the full-blown lifecycle management, usually you need a VM of sort or bare metal if you want. We Foreman itself is a Rails application, Ruby on Rails, so it supports a variety of databases. You can pick your own. We have an installer which tries to simplify the installation process. We also have a component we call the Foreman proxy, which is basically the component that knows how to manage your various DNS servers, DHCP servers, BMC, stuff like that. So you can usually install many of those proxies around, maybe one of your Windows DNS server, another on your, Bind ISC DHCP server or whatever you're using. So you'll have to deploy them wherever your actual service is. If you obviously like any infrastructure management tool, you need probably to invest there to set up the components, because as you mentioned, there are a lot of moving parts when you do provisioning, specifically on bare metal. If you're just going to use EC2 or whatever cloud provider, you don't need any infrastructure locally, but because it's all driven through the EC2 or whatever cloud backend API. But you probably make sense to use Puppet, or at least to use it to some degree before. We're also looking to use other configuration management tools, and it's possible to use Foreman without Puppet, but it will mostly be the provisioning part rather than the whole lifecycle management.
Right. So I want to get back to something you mentioned, the proxy server. So the proxy server is basically there because if you have separate environments, right? If you have two different offices or whatever, two different environments, you need a proxy server because you have to talk to some of these, like the DHCP server, for example, you need to talk to that on an internal network, right? So that's what the proxy server is doing, is you send information to the proxy server. The proxy server then tells the DHCP server, go put this entry in your tables, so to speak. But it has to do that locally. Because of security reasons. Is that sum up why the proxy server is needed?
That's partly one of the reasons. You're right that when you have segmented networks, you need some way to have a secure way to punch a hole. But the other reason for that is that usually if you have a larger enterprise, you want to know the big state or the overall status. If you look at most provisioning tools, they are usually bound to a network or bound to a data center, or most of them are bound to a DHCP server. And if you have a large setup, you want to be able not to be bound. You want to be, you want to know your status, and you want to be able to provision around the entire infrastructure through the same place with the same auditing with the whole same process.
Yeah, I can see this is going to be a huge time saver for people that are deploying large numbers of servers or large numbers of VMs. I mean, if you've got 10, 20, 50 servers or VMs to configure, this is going to be really important. And I can also see why you're getting a lot of feedback, right? Because these people are doing this day in and day out, so it's very important. what kind of competitors to Foreman are there? I mean, are there a lot of other tools that you see, you know, as your primary competition, both from an open source perspective, but also a proprietary perspective?
Okay, I'm not sure if I know all of the tools out there. I think that within the Foreman niche, which means we talked about provisioning mostly so far, but Foreman Go is also very tight integration with configuration management and the ability to influence, and update configuration on the fly. That means, just a common scenario. If you have a composite application consists of a web server, a couple of web servers and a database, and they need to know about each other, and they need to know, each one needs to know the other's one's password, and, you know, they need some way to securely communicate and pass information between one another. We also do that. So I'm not aware of a tool who tries to aim to do all of this stuff. There are other provisioning tools, open source, like Cobbler and Razor, which is pretty nice, from Puppet Labs. There are, and in the configuration management, we have Puppet, we have Chef, we have Ansible, we have CF Engine, all great tools. I think commercially, to be honest, I'm not that aware. I know there are, BMC and there are other HP and Oracle based, but I'm not, I never had a chance to work with them really.
Mm-hmm. Also, I was wondering, like, is this solely a, since you work for Red Hat now, I'm just trying to figure out how you are thinking about making money. I mean, is there any way to support this project other than Red Hat, basically offering to pay your salary and trying to work it into their software stack? Is there another angle here? In other words, do you offer support, or does that come through Red Hat now? I'm just trying to figure out how you stay afloat.
So at the moment, we don't have any, we have just community offering. That means we have a pretty good IRC channel, mailing list, and, traditional open source channels. I know there are a few people who are doing Foreman consulting and Foreman and Puppet consulting, but that's, nothing that I at least do officially. Red Hat eventually will provide a product called CloudForms, and that will be supported, but that will consist of Foreman and as an engine and a few other tools around it. So if you just want to use Foreman at the moment, sadly, there's no commercial offering. I'm aware of that, and I know a few people have mentioned that this is one of the biggest disadvantages, but I've yet to find a good way to address that. Hmm. So if anyone in our audience have a good way, I'm more than happy to hear about that.
So another question I had is around Puppet. I mean, are there any plans to expand beyond Puppet to...
Yeah, so we, initially we came from Puppet, or at least I was using Puppet basically before Chef was out, and CF Engine didn't really work that well for me. We are looking into get Chef support because the constructs are very similar between Puppet and Chef, and it's just a question of resources to implement. It's actually, I don't think it's a big deal to do that. And sadly, when the project gets as large as we get, we're just basically fighting for resources at the moment.
Yeah. I'm wondering about, speaking of Puppet, what about isn't there a new version of Puppet out? Puppet, I don't know if it's 3 or 3.1.
Yeah. The open source or the commercial?
Yeah, the open Puppet source. Do you guys support that, or is that...
So our Git branch supports that. We are planning for a release candidate tomorrow that will support that. So, yeah.
Okay, good. That's breaking news then, right here on Floss Weekly.
Yeah. Indeed.
Wait for it tomorrow. It's coming out tomorrow. That's what a good developer should always say, right?
Yeah.
Why? I'm just kind of curious, too. Why the Foreman? What's behind the name? And is it the Foreman or is it Foreman? It's the Foreman.
Well, okay. So we, you know, picking up names for open source projects is a very difficult task. I went through a few names before and register even DNS, you know, to get a website and so on. And all it's every time you realize, oh, there's another project with the same name, or oh, there is another something similar or whatever. Eventually, we choose Foreman because it's the, you know, construction foreman, one who organizes and manages the whole thing. It sounds like a good thing. We use the Foreman because back then Foreman.org was already used, I think. I think most people today refer to it as Foreman, like once Facebook was the Facebook and they dropped the D. So we're somewhere in the same phase.
I kind of like it, though, the Foreman. We're here to make sure everything gets done on time and get all the changes done. I kind of like that. Also, I wonder, you haven't had any trouble with George Foreman, have you? Like, you know, people thinking that they're going to get a grill in the mail, something like that.
Well, not that much, but usually when I initially started Google searching or Twitter searching, you know, it was always hitting on George Foreman or other Foremans.
But, yeah. And you guys have developed a mobile app too, right? You have a Android app available?
Actually, a community member developed that. He wrote a mobile app that works both on Android and on the iPhone, iPads. Pretty nice, pretty awesome. It was built on top of our API. That was kind of cool to see that happening. And you can, I don't know if you can do with the latest version everything you can do with the UI, but it's pretty nice. Very nice when you have to walk through your data center and you're looking for some information. You can use that.
Is that a problem for, I mean, I'm just thinking like for myself, I've got my phone in my pocket and all of a sudden I send some weird text to my wife. At least that's the excuse I always use. No, you know, I send some sort of weird text because it's in my pocket. I mean, is that a problem? Like, could I push a button on the app and have like all my servers now have different like DNS settings or something?
I hope not. I think normally the application is mostly informative. You could add like, you know, you can add roles to your systems, like make this server a web server now, make it whatever it is. You can make that kind of on via the application or see the inventory or status. I think that's most of the functionality.
You're certainly not going to be able to, you know, I was just thinking back to this thing about isolating you from, you know, bare metal versus VMs versus EC2 and the other things is, how do you define, given all those multiple targets, what image you're running? Because I know that EC2 images have to be prepared specially, and if it's bare metal, it has to boot properly and understand its environment and so on. How do you isolate that, or do you?
Okay, so basically, when we provision, regardless of where we end up provisioning, we would like to get to a point where we have a juice. And juice stands for just enough OS. And we have various ways to get there. It could be image-based or it could be build-based. Build is like a traditional peak cboot processes. But we don't really care. Like, we'll help to either provision the system from bare metal and be able to create the image, or use an existing image from EC2 where a user say, oh, this image is actually this operating system on this architecture, and you can use it as a juice.
Does this work with Image Factory?
No, it does not. We're, you know, it's pretty trivial to hook the two together, and hopefully we'll do it at one point in time.
Yeah, I know, because we had them on a few weeks ago, and I was just thinking, well, that would be perfect for that. Then I could provision it that way and make it all spin up. Cool. Okay. What am I looking at on the dashboard? So am I just seeing that a system has been provisioned, or is there also status, you know, like this is up and up to date or whatever?
Yeah, so usually you care about what's happening now in your infrastructure. So you want to see how many systems are okay. So when the system is running, you really care that, you know, it's in compliance, it's running the way it is, it's doing what it's supposed to be doing, and you want to know that the system was checked, that it's actually working within a certain time range. So you get in a very simple dashboard, you get kind of a pie showing you how many systems are okay. How many systems are not running or not running Puppet, for example? How many systems are did something successfully, but they were active from some reason? Or how many systems are, you know, all kind of scenarios where, you know, a system was having some sort of an error and you want to see what was wrong. So you get kind of a big glance seeing how many systems are of which category. And then you can start drilling down and see, okay, here are the host names, here is the actual report saying, oh, this line was actually with this error, and you could zoom in.
Okay, clearly that's not a full replacement for something like Nagios, but at least it gives you sort of just a green light for most of the stuff, right? Okay.
Yeah, go ahead. It's mostly for configuration management. So ideally, your configuration management should include all the things that you care about, and then you could easily see if everything is up to date. I have to say, obviously, this is not a monitoring framework, and the interval of which reports are coming in is based on how often you run your configuration management tool. So if you run it once a day, the visible information would be basically, you know, depending on your run interval.
Oh, so it's not pulling like every minute or so to see what's going on.
Well, one of the design goals was not to have an agent because there's so many agents running on your systems. So we tried to avoid that.
Okay. And how pluggable is this? If I have a piece of hardware that has a more private API that isn't one of the big seven or whatever they are to deploy against, am I just building LiveVert modules or am I plugging in something at a higher level in Foreman or what?
Do you mean how would you deploy? Or I'm not sure I got the question.
Yeah, well, I'm just thinking. My previous client is rolling out a whole new device, and they've already announced it, so I'm not giving anything away. But I don't think the APIs there are the same as anything else. And so I'm wondering how, if this thing could easily be targeted to that. I think it's the APIs for, like, you know, defining where the image is stored and defining where, you know, how, what IP addresses the VMs have and things like that.
Yeah, so sure. We have an API that you could easily say, I want this kind of new system. And then we have abstracted the virtual machine or cloud-based provisioning into a few, between 3 to 5 different parameters that you need to know for each and every provider. So if you're deploying on ECT, you probably need to say, I want this type of machine, small, large, or whatever, or maybe the security zone. But if you're deploying to vSphere, you might want to know, okay, I want to use this cluster and this storage pool. So you have a few different attributes that you need to know based on where you want to provide provision, but basically, it's tiny, ideally tiny details.
So that's great. So that means I could actually plug this into other things if I need to.
Just one more thing about the last question.
Sure.
A few months ago, we actually moved to using a very popular cloud library called Fog. So it's very popular, and it's pretty much supports most of the cloud or virtualization providers these days. So it's pretty easy. There's a good chance that if you want to deploy to something which is common, that the code is already there, and then we just have to do the adaptation and Foreman. Or, you know, worst case, we write the component. We wrote a few parts in Fog. For ourselves, but generally there's a good chance that the code is already there and already easy to integrate with.
Okay, great. I'm looking at the list of who uses Foreman on your website, and the list is very impressive. Obviously, this project's been around for a while. If you can tell me, is Red Hat eating their own dog food on this? Is there is it being used in any extensive way within the company?
So there are actually quite a few islands of users within. So we have obviously the IT department use it to some degree. And their new setup, there's a really pretty good integration with Red Hat virtualization services. So we're building up a new setup in the IT. But there's also a lot of developer groups who use it. There's a good integration with continuous integration and Foreman. So, when you want to do spin up a lot of systems, run a test, put them back in a pool, then start again. So we have quite a lot of users that are doing really interesting stuff with continuous integration. I don't know exactly how many, that's one of the challenges of open source. I have no idea how many users we have and how many systems they manage normally. And the same kind of goes within Red Hat itself. So I'm aware about between 5 to 10 different Foreman instances running around. Sadly, my desire that there will be only one. So far, I wasn't successful. We are eating.
Good. So is this production? This is production ready then. I can put this into a system and bet my clients' machines on it and not be too scared at night, right?
I hope so, yeah.
There's the weasel answer. I knew it was coming soon. So where is it at now, and where is it headed? What's still missing that would make this thing just really the slickest thing on earth?
One of the things we recently got merged, or today actually, was multi-tenant and organization location support. It was pretty big, and I think was required for larger enterprises. The ability to segment both in permissions and both in resources, their infrastructure. We have a power. Power's gone. I think I'm the only one in the office, and they closed down the lights.
They're kicking you out.
No, I just hope the alarm won't start soon. But
this is great. All right. Just keep going. Hopefully we'll get all your answers before you have to get rid of us.
So, other features we're working on, as you guys mentioned already, another implementation for, besides Puppet, have a more pluggable integration. We are looking now into some network management, like switches. If you need to do bare metal with bonds and more complicated setups, that we can actually reach out using our proxy infrastructure and manage switches. We are now working as well on bare metal auto discovery, which is going ahead pretty well. So you could put your servers, just put a bunch of servers, turn them on. They auto register and they can automatically do stuff with them. Things like that. I'm sure I forgot quite a few, large scale items. But we're also working, obviously, on having a better documented API. And that's something we're actively doing at the moment. And I think the last thing we're actively doing is about plugging architecture, so people can add their own. I have a plugin that automatically integrates Foreman and my monitoring system, that whenever I reprovision the system, it turn it off for monitoring, or whatever people that might need, whatever integrations people might need.
Cool. Okay. And since you probably don't have much battery left, I'll ask you just a couple more questions real quick. You were talking about having a way to do a multi-hosting, multi-platform, whatever that thing is. Is that like white label? Can I like take this and allow, put my own brand on it and let people brand their own and provision their own machines?
Well, it's GPLv3 in terms of license. So as long as it's within the boundaries of that, you can do whatever you want. Saying that, a lot of people implemented their own website on top of the API. I heard on a Node.js application a couple of days ago, and people, a lot of large enterprises usually basically once they have their own tightly integrated workflow, so they use Foreman as an engine through the API. So.
Okay. Okay, and what are you looking for in terms of community, in terms of like services or skill set or anything? Because we're talking to a pretty large audience here. Is there anything sort of missing in your skill set? Translators, coders, and if coding in what language, documenters? What do you need to make the project move forward?
So first of all, we're happy with any contribution whatsoever. We care about happy users, and I think that's the first thing we want, and I hope that our users are mostly happy. At the same time, I think our website and documentation facilities are not that great. We're actually actively working now on a new website, but still we need a lot of help to get it more appealing. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that are not, just going for the website and moving to the next one, not really realizing exactly what's involved. In terms of translation, we didn't really start, even though we have the infrastructure to do that. So it's pretty hard to find good developers that actually understand infrastructure and really understand the challenges in infrastructure and how to make it scale and how an enterprise would work and what are enterprise requirements. If anyone thinks but at the end of the day, if you have an idea, that's usually more than enough for us to start. And you know, if you want to take it all the way, we'll follow you and work together until we get what you need. Because there's a good chance that whatever people needs, that someone else's requirements, down the road as well. So.
And given that this is a piece of, I just thought of this now, given that this is a piece of critical infrastructure, does it open itself easily to high availability techniques?
Yeah, sure. It's a Rails app, so it's a web-based application. You could put a load balancer, you can put Memcached, you could put a high available database setup, like you would scale any other Rails application.
Okay, and again, before your battery runs out, was there anything we didn't talk about that you wanted to make sure our audience is aware of?
I just want to say thank. I just want to appreciate all of the users and all of the people that actually gave us really valuable feedback or code or whatever it is. I've been having a lot of fun doing it, and I hope we'll be able to continue growing. And if you guys or anyone else wants to know some more information, just make sure you reach us.
Very good. And I've got to ask my two standard questions. One is, what's your favorite scripting language?
As it stands, Ruby.
Okay. Sort of expected that one, because you're working a lot with Puppet and Chef. It seems like a pretty natural thing to do. And your favorite text editor?
I use VI.
Yay. Lost on both. That's okay. Well, I don't have to always have a win on that column, either one there. So, Ohad, I got to let you go before you go totally black there, because it looks like it's all getting dark there. So thanks a lot for being on the show.
Thank you very much for hosting me.
Very good. That was Ohad Levy, who apparently is in a building that they just shut off the lights on. So if you didn't watch the video, you might not have known what we were actually chatting about. But for like the last 10 minutes, he's been in the dark only by the monitor glow from his laptop, or hopefully it's a laptop, because if it was desktop, I don't know how it was running. Anyway, pretty interesting. What do you think, Aaron?
Pretty interesting stuff. Certainly something that's needed. There have been other tools around for eons, ever since the beginnings of Unix, to help with these kinds of problems. But the nice thing here is that it's built on a framework that's already very popular and well used, that being Puppet. They're looking to expand that, and they're going beyond just the configuration to do system updates as well. So not only is it you can roll out your system, but then you can go back later on when your DHCP server address changes or whatever, you can actually update all those settings on the fly and do that across, I would assume your whole enterprise, or at least big chunks of it. So I think these kind of tools are really good, and I'm just glad it's an open source project. Looks like they're doing really well. So I think we'll see great things from them in the future.
Yeah, I also like the fact that, we have actually talked to other people in the past, also from Red Hat sometimes, about the, sort of hiding the complexities of the different sort of cloud interfaces. But I think this is the first time we've talked to someone who's actually also then stepped back even one further step back and abstracted the difference between that and bare metal. And I know that I know a lot of people for whom this is going to be pretty exciting, especially when they have to deal with bare metal, VM, and cloud provisioning. And it'd really be nice to have just one nice collective interface for all that, one source of truth for all that.
Exactly. Yeah, we've talked to a number of people that do one or the other. Having this tool that can do both is really, really helpful.
Very cool. Well, speaking of upcoming guests, that was an awkward transition for the week, which really wasn't all that awkward. We don't have very many on the schedule. I've got a weekend coming up that I'm going to be sending out about a dozen emails. Hopefully we'll fill most of Q1 by then. But next week we do have Broadleaf Commerce, which promises to be a fully customizable open source e-commerce framework. Yeah, buzzword bingo on that one. We'll see how that goes. CakePHP, the following week, is a very popular web framework in the PHP world. They're going to be coming on soon. Well, a couple weeks from now. Yesod, something like that, is also a web framework and written in Haskell, the language I've tried numerous times to learn and just can't get my brain around it. The week after that is the day after Christmas in the U.S. Actually, it's just everywhere Christmas. Everywhere that celebrates Christmas, I should say. And so the Brick House will be shut down, so I won't be doing a live show, but there's plenty of repeats to watch during that week anyway, but there won't be a show in the stream. January 2nd, Node.js. We had to cancel them. They canceled us, one or the other, but they rescheduled for the very first show of the new year. Really excited about that. There will be more shows I could talk about next week, probably, as we get the schedules cleaned up. So if you go to the spreadsheet at twit.tv/floss, you'll see our current and upcoming guests and even the ones we're trying to schedule. You can follow us on Floss Weekly on Google+, and Floss Weekly on Identica and Twitter. We also have a live chat room. We take one or two questions today from the chat room. That's at live.twit.tv. We tape at 8:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays, so you can join us then. And if you can get the live stream to work, I saw there was a couple complaints about that today, then you'll be able to follow along with us and see what we're actually doing. You can follow me at Merlyn, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter, and also Identica, but I don't post there. But mostly I'm on Google+ these days, Randall L. Schwartz there. Lots of lively discussions around my weight loss, around open source, around controversies in politics occasionally, and you should see some of the threads I get going on that. Yeah, I had a great birthday last week, had a great Thanksgiving. All that was great. I got to go home for my birthday, got to go home for Thanksgiving. And if you follow my weight loss thing, I actually put on about 3 pounds, but in the following 4 days, I've already lost that back. So I'm neutral for the week, but that's an amazing thing to have happen across the Thanksgiving and big birthday celebration. So I'm very happy about the track I'm going on. Again, this is not this week in Randall's weight, but I've decided based on my body fat that I'm losing another 18 pounds before I call myself stable. So then we'll take a look at that. That's all I want to share this time. Aaron, what do you have to share?
You know, I'm at Aaron Newcomb on all of the social networks. So whether you're on Facebook, Twitter, especially Google+, you can follow me there. Somehow I've got a huge uptick in Google+ again. It kind of goes in spurts, I guess. But I appreciate all the followers on Google+ because I can actually talk to you there and start a hangout and talk about interesting things like my birthday, Randall Schwartz. I didn't know your birthday was in November. My birthday was yesterday. So if you want to see what my birthday cake looked like, add me to your circles on Google+, and you can see the beautiful cake that my 10-year-old daughter made for me. She did a great job. So, follow me wherever you can, especially here on the Twit Network. You know, I'm occasionally on All About Android, this week in Google. I think I'm on TNT today. I don't see Jason over there. I think I'm on TNT coming up. I haven't got an email from him, so I may have gotten bumped. I don't know. But, follow me on Twit, especially, and especially on this show, Floss Weekly. Always fun to be here.
Cool. And so since I have a feeling I know what I wasn't going to go there. You and I are both born right in the era where February 14th was 9 months earlier.
Right.
I'll just say it that way. Okay, that's probably the best way to put that.
That's right.
Yes. My parents were actually married on February 14th, and I was born 9 months later, and my parents also had a child exactly 1 year later after that, so I know the first anniversary, so that's all pretty fun. That's TMI. I'm sorry. I don't know where I'm going with that, but anyway, I'm happy to be in my new digs with my new gig going on. It's my second day of work here, so hopefully they won't fire me for tying up the office Wi-Fi for this show, but we'll see how that goes. Anyway, we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.